If you've never been to the Maryland Renaissance Festival, you don't know what you're missing. There's so much to see and do. It's like a 16th century theme park with shops and pubs, food and games, live jousting, crafts and music, 10 stages with nonstop entertainment. Fun for the whole family. Saturdays, Sundays, and Labor Day Monday through October 20th. Tickets online only at MarylandRenaissanceFestival.com. Save big on admission through September 8th. Near Annapolis, the Maryland Renaissance Festival. Time travel to fun.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Stacey from The Advisor. And today I'm very excited because we have a very special guest with us today. It is Britton Kolber, and he is a psychotherapist and an author of a very special book that he's going to be telling us about today. So I'm very excited to have him on the show. But before I begin, I'd just like to give a quick shout out to DMA World. They are a marketing consultant agency, and they believe in helping the little person. They hate when people get scammed by these big marketing companies, and they don't want you to throw away your money. So come and visit dmaworld.com, where they help the little businesses grow to become big businesses, and they don't have to spend a fortune. So, you know, let's focus on dmaworld.com, and they will help you grow into the business that you want to become and reach the goals that you've always dreamed of reaching. So let's throw it on to our special guest today. And Britton, tell us a little about yourself and tell us what you do, because I'm very excited to have you on the show. This is great. Go ahead.
I'm happy to tell you more. I just want to comment on the sponsor, and I'm so glad that there are people that are sponsoring little people, you know, like the special vehicle accommodations, you know, not clothes don't always fit everyone. You know, I worked with a little person when I was in undergraduate. And I know this is not exactly what you're talking about. I'm just taking us in a sideways direction. But I think that's true. I mean, you know, there is a lot of stuff that's for people that are little in stature and also the small businesses. You know, that's a really cool thing. So about me is I am a psychotherapist. And I think it's important to be kind to people and also find ways to laugh. You know, find ways for us to get to a sense of safety.
Right.
Because like being able to laugh about things is such an amazing way to feel like you're not alone.
Exactly.
And so this is the stuff I've learned over many years, but also just as a psychotherapist, I've been in practice for about 11 years now. And I've seen lots of really difficult stories. I've seen lots of hard times people have been through. And it is such an amazing thing when I can help someone get to the point where they start to like, oh yeah, that's me again. I'm catastrophizing. I'm making it a much bigger thing than it is.
Right.
So those kinds of things are like amazing, you know, to be a part of, to help facilitate. And that's one of the things that has guided this book so I wrote a book called Not Fishy Enough. And Not Fishy Enough is a ridiculous parable about finding worth through self-acceptance. And it's a hard road. And if we can make it just a little bit easier, that would be great. And that's the mission of this.
Now, do you feel, you know, I feel learning how to accept ourselves is so important because I feel like many people do not accept who they are, and they're hard on themselves. And, people have to really focus on the positive things about themselves and the strengths. And when they come across the negative things or they come across the things they don't like, I would think it's really good to stop for a second. Let's focus on those beautiful strengths about ourselves and give ourselves a pat on the back. And if we don't like something, maybe it's time to set some goals, not hard goals, but maybe, you know, some short-term goals and some long-term goals and try to like maybe accomplish a little bit each day to get yourself to that point where you can build that thick skin and build that self-esteem and be able to really learn to accept who you are and then get to the stages where you actually love who you are. How do you feel about that?
I think it's great. I mean, I think it's wonderful when people can do it because of what I've had the privilege of being able to be a part of. I also know that there are good reasons why people don't. And right. That's been hard for me to wrestle with. So let's say someone has a problem with breaking promises to a partner, mm-hmm. or they have a problem with alcohol and they want to stop. They don't know how. And then you say, oh, it's, you know, well, self-acceptance, do this. Well, wait, so I'm supposed to accept the fact that I keep cheating on my partner and that makes me fine? Or I'm supposed to accept that I have a bottle of tequila a day? How does self-acceptance work? And it's like, okay, I see how you got there, because you don't want to keep doing that. Right. And so what I try to tell people to do is, how do I put this? It's important to have a growth mindset. And there are books written about this. There are others that go into more detail on this. But if you have believed that it's possible to change, then the self-kindness stuff makes sense, or the self-acceptance stuff makes sense.
Right.
And if you like, it means you can like part of who you are, and you can like even all of who you are, and not be okay with what you keep doing.
Right.
You know, like, I can like me in a holistic sense, mm-hmm. but I can also change and start drinking less, or join a program, or figure out why I keep trying to get love at all costs, even if it means cheating on my partner. Does that right. make sense?
No, it definitely makes sense. Now, let's get down to it. Do you think that people really give a damn about being valued or listened to? Or do you think it's just that they're too self-absorbed to care? Because a lot of people keep doing and repeating the same behavior over and over and over again. Do they, you know, are people, you know, we live in a society where people, you know, are sometimes, you know, they don't look at how they're affecting other people. Mm-hmm. They get so self-absorbed in mm-hmm. what they mm-hmm. are doing, mm-hmm. what they want and what their goals are, that they kind of, you know, they forget about the people around them. And so how do you think people do you think people really give a damn when they're so mm-hmm. self-absorbed into themselves? And because, you know, if you're so self-absorbed into yourself, mm-hmm. you know, are you really care about accepting yourself and changing?
Sure. That's a great question. So I think it could be affected by the confirmation bias. Like, if you're looking for people to be self-absorbed, that's what you're going to find, you know, if you get a new red umbrella, everyone suddenly has red umbrellas, you know, must be a trendsetter, you know, you get a green car, everyone's got a green car. So that's confirmation bias. So that could be affecting it, but also there are a lot of people that are self-absorbed. You know, I mean, 100% with you there. And self-absorbed is kind of similar to self-acceptance. Some people are like, well, I don't want to be self-absorbed. I don't want to be one of those people. So why should I accept myself? Like, it's better for me to be like excessively humble, or not even humble, just like completely self-deprecating, so I don't end up being self-absorbed. You know, that pattern happens a lot. And the best combination that I run across comes from a woman named Roshi Joan Halifax. And she's kind of like Dalai Lama adjacent. I don't know what their relationship is, but I saw a video and they were hanging out. And it's a two-parter. So that means her thing is strong back, soft front. So strong back is kind of like, well, you've got a spine and it's flexible. And if you bend over too much, you kind of lose who you are. You lose your stature, your poise. And the metaphor is about... So integrity, as well as valuing yourself, having values, living according to those values. Okay, that's part one. The second part is having a soft front. So a soft front is your skin is, well, thick enough to kind of be able to hold your spine in, but open enough, soft enough to realize, oh, I was acting in my integrity and I thought this was great, but it impacted you. I'm sorry about that. You know, I'm open to it. I'm not going to go into a shame spiral and like question like all of my life's decisions. Right. But going by that strong back, soft front, you are kind of like, okay, I'm open. I'm me, but I'm open to you. Like, that joke was supposed to be funny. You didn't laugh at all.
Right.
How's that like for you? Does that answer the self-absorbed question? Yes.
No, it definitely does. I think people have to really realize that, everybody has a different personality. And, we tend to think that everybody thinks, sometimes we forget everybody's their own individual and that everybody reacts mm-hmm. differently mm-hmm. and that we really need to focus on what makes, other people tick and what makes people sometimes offensive, we have to really get out of ourselves, get out of, and not think so much about what we like, what we want, but actually, think about other people around us and knowing and understanding. And I always say sometimes it's good to take a step back out of our own bodies and put yourself in that person's space for a minute. Mm-hmm.
Right.
When we put ourselves into that person and we try to think like them, mm-hmm. then we can understand why they're reacting the way they are. And then we can respect that and maybe mm-hmm. reapproach the way we're verbalizing ourselves mm-hmm. or the actions we're taking.
Right.
That way we can actually have a better relationship with other people.
That's true.
I think with self-acceptance, it makes us a better person because it gives us qualities of understanding others. And then the understanding others, I think we mm-hmm. start to learn how to understand ourselves. Mm-hmm. It works both ways, because mm-hmm. you really have to, really care about, other people in order to care, mm-hmm. first, I think it's important to care about ourselves, and mm-hmm. then that self-love, kind of shines through, mm-hmm. but yeah, definitely. Now you're so into self-acceptance. You really, mm-hmm. feel a passion for this topic.
Sure.
And I can tell by the way you're talking and all the work that you've put in, throughout the mm-hmm. years, have you ever, has something ever happened in your life that mm-hmm. has made you so passionate about self-acceptance? Oh, I want to hear, spill the beans. Like I want to hear all
the beans spilling. Okay. So, I grew up, so I'm half Austrian. My dad was from Austria and my mom was from Texas. And if you know much about that, those are very, very different cultures. So I kind of grew up in the middle of those and trying to be like part of the group was almost impossible. Like around first grade, I had spent a year in Austria and I came back in first grade and I had an accent. And that was just not an especially friendly place to you're not us.
Yeah.
And so sure, passing is white, et cetera, but also, being white, European American, but emphasis on the European, there is it was kind of like, oh, you're one of us, but started talking and you're kind of not. Also, I had failed preschool 3 times. Now that's hard to do. And in fact, no one has ever, I haven't run into anyone else that has said oh, that happened to me too. But what that means is there was always a sort of questioning of what is it about me? And so part of that self-acceptance happened early where I started realizing, actually my mom modeled this first, thinking about it. There was a story where they were asking me a question and I remember it. This was kind of like, are you going to go on to the next grade? And said, does a boat have wheels? And I was like, yes. And you're like, oh God. Because they were thinking, and obviously very simplistic terms, trucks have wheels, cars have wheels, boats don't. But I was always thinking a couple of steps ahead because, and I was like, this is a trick question. But I didn't even have the words for that. I knew they were trying to get me because I had already been interested in amphibious boats and boats have wheels on them and pulleys and stuff like that. So self-acceptance happened super at a formative age, but I'm not saying it was always easy, but the seed was planted. I'm like this, and that's what my story is a lot about, is I'm like this, what if that's okay?
Right.
I spent lots of other time sort of blending in with or trying to kind of give up a little bit of who I was just to fit, and mm-hmm. I never found it satisfying. I always felt like I was losing something. There was some kind of safety in it,
yeah,
but I didn't feel right.
I agree totally with you. You know, I found myself many times in that situation when I was learning how to accept who I am and then work on bettering myself. You know, I find that many people, we have a lot of opinionated people in this world. And, you know, life could be a roller coaster ride. It could be very harsh too. You know, these, you know, there are people always sharing of, you know, what they think you should do, what they think you should be, how they think you should act, what the right way is to, you know, but that's their perception. That's not because everybody's their own individual. Mm-hmm. So, you know, do you have any tips for our listeners on how to develop that thick skin? You know, like we, it's like you said, it's not self-satisfying when you actually are doing things to be, you know, accepted by others. You know, we're satisfied when we are our own person and we like the person we are. Mm-hmm. So when you have all those people around you and everyone's throwing out opinions, you know, of what they think you should be and act mm-hmm. and so forth, mm-hmm. you know, how do you deal with people like that? How do you get that thick skin? How do you feel comfortable in your own shoes? You know, do you have tips for the listeners on how they could actually, you know, be a leader and not a follower, not worry about the people around them and what they're saying?
Well, I'm going to go kind of in my characteristic way, kind of sideways on this, because I think thick skin is kind of useful, but I think it's honestly useful only to a point.
Okay.
Because thick skin, as I'm seeing it, is a kind of a barrier between you and me. And I think that's important, but it also kind of closes the door. If I have my skin is too thick, I don't really care what you think.
Right.
I mean, it's nice to, but that means I could also be unintentionally stomp on your feelings when actually you're quite sensitive about something. But being thick-skinned is great because then, well, you're not rattled when someone says, ugh, you know, you got those shoes. You're like, whatever, you know, I like them. I don't care. You know, so it's a balance. I mean, my motto of my life has always been about balance. So my tip would be around balance. Again, like the thing with the strong back, soft front, you know, it's like I have some integrity. My skin is thick, but not so thick that I can't be open to like, I accidentally hurt your feelings and I didn't mean it.
Right. Exactly.
So, and also I think another key of this is to be, and this is from straight out of Brené Brown's Gifts of Imperfection. And I think she had a great tip to say where the thing to focus on is being not perfectionistic, but rather something else. So perfectionism is other focused. It's like, well, what will they think? I have to get it right so that they'll be okay, so that I'll be safe, so I will be kicked. I'll be kicked out of the tribe. You know, I'm wearing the right Pantone colors for this season. I'm not wearing white after the wrong date. There's all this constraint, and so if it's self focused. If it's growth focused, then it's, well, am I better than I was last week? Cool. You know, if I'm weigh 350 pounds and I'm down to 335, I can feel good, even though I might be pretty overweight by other people's standards. But so it's me, it's self-focused, but not self-absorbed, you know, not at the expense of other people, not kind of pushing people away.
How do you feel about humor? You know, a lot of times, you know, they always say sometimes putting humor into it, you know, not taking so seriously what others think. And even, you know, what, you know, how you feel as a person, you know, not being so hard on yourself, you know, maybe bringing humor into it. They say sometimes the science of it behind it, it's okay to like not look at life so seriously and to kind of chuckle off sometimes the hard stuff and to not be so hard on yourself and trying to look at life, you know, in a fun way, you know, and not so much in a serious way. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I feel really passionately about that because I have both taken myself way too seriously and also accidentally real hurt some people with what I thought was funny at the time. I had to go back and figure out how to repair that. So I think it goes pretty deeply. Like I've done, improvisational comedy. I did it in high school. I did it with a group called Comedy Sports that had a branch in Austin. I've written some sketch comedy. There's something about finding you know, not having like a whole lot of safety net. You know, you say something and then, you know, it's out there. And one of the best ways to get there is something that is true. You know, it's not particularly clever, but it's true. You know, if you say things that are true, it kind of hurts a little bit when it's funny.
Right.
And it's important to balance that with a little bit of kindness.
You know,
like power is important.
You know, right.
There's like the humor is safe when you're making fun of your friends that you've known for 10 to 15 years, you know, about right. that thing they do that's irritating or like they keep doing.
Yeah.
That's in a safe context. You know, it's a kind of a parallel power, you know, of like, where's the punch going? Right. But if you crack a joke about immigrants, even if it's true, it's kind of gross, you know, it's not really great. But if you sort of like, well, punch up in terms of like a power structure or like, you know, and the people that have the most acceptance in the society, well, that's kind of also okay. And right. what that whole thing is about, not about like politicism and stuff like that, it's more about safety.
Right.
Because if you're using the power of who you are just accidentally by being in the world, and you make fun of someone that has less, it stings a bit. It's like being like in kindergarten and the sixth grader makes fun of you. It's like, oh, I now I feel awful.
Yeah.
You know? So again, it's something about true that's super important. It's something about safety. Like the coolest researcher about safety is Stephen Porges, at least in my opinion, is about, you know, lots of things about how trauma impacts people and they don't feel safe in their body. They, you know, they, everything's kind of like a little amped up for some people. And he has a section in a training I went to about how humor can help sort of settle, you know,
right.
if it's done safely, you can actually build some resilience. You're not taking everything seriously. You know, like I'm taking a massive risk when I have my pronouns rather than he, him, I say that guy, the one with the nose. Because it's like that you're not doing the thing. You're not, you must be transphobic if you're not following the structure. I'm like, no, I care deeply. I know that pronouns matter. I know that setting up a system that's normal, where everyone says what they are, means that the person who's trying to figure it out, you know, or however they're doing it, they're not singled out. So it's a routine we do. But I also want to add some levity to it because, gosh, it's the whole therapist thing gets really serious sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? And so I want to take it seriously, but I also want to be like, I'm just some guy. And I have a family nose, you know, is not small.
You know, I found myself doing that many times too. And it kind of takes the, you know, it kind of helps you really realize who you are. And yes, I am this person and I accept it. And, you know, and you know what, you know, like you said, we're not perfect, you know, and, you know, and sometimes we just have to make a joke about it because it's like, you know, we know we have flaws and some things are changeable and some things are not going to change, you know, because it's a part of us, who we are as a person.
Totally.
You know, have you ever had like anything in your life that, you know, that you maybe you're in a situation where you just, you know, you were friends and like you said, talking and you just started to laugh your ass off because it, you know, it was something about whatever you're talking about. And it was about you or, you know, and you laughed your ass off because you knew it was true and, you know, and you don't have any problems with it, but it made you feel better because you got to that point where, I accept myself. I know, like you said, with your nose and you joked around.
Well, like part of how I used to cope with things is like, I would get nervous. I would analyze.
Yeah.
And like after a while, it'd be like, dude, Britt, stop analyzing everything so much. Just it's fine. And, you know, and people would otherwise, you know, and others in the group would be like, it's like, oh, like that stings a little bit, but I'll kind of feel seen.
Yeah.
Like I feel like this thing that I'm touchy about, mm-hmm. you know, like, because it's like my defense mechanism.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of okay. Like that's a transformation.
Yes.
You know, that's a massive transformation. Like one of the most affirming things about this whole view of humor that I have is I got to meet and sort of connect with one of my comedy heroes, John Cleese of Monty Python. And the conversation, we had a particular conversation about psychology. So he's passionate about it. He actually co-wrote a book with a psychiatrist. In addition to his, you know, prodigious humor with Monty Python and A Fish Called Wanda and lots of other things.
Yeah.
And so we talked about this and he's like, there's something about, well, kindness, yes, you don't want to just be mean to people, but also there's something about when we can like have a deep laugh that is transformational.
Right.
It can be. Like it's not, I used to think it was just two things. It was either something like, stand-up comics can use comedy to like often shield themselves from the actual change they want or the actual thing that's the problem. And they'll just kind of like laugh it off. You know, like that's the defense mechanism version of comedy.
Right.
And some people use it as like, okay, that was hard. And now I can laugh about it, you know, like, or that the laughing about it helps me get through it.
Right.
But I never, until I talked with John Cleese, it never occurred to me that it would just like, that comedy or the laughter could be the thing that just like actually does the change. You're like, I am transformed because I laughed my ass off.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. I think he's right.
No, I think I agree with you because I think, you know, when you overanalyze things and like you mentioned, you know, I feel like people get more, they overthink it. They make the problem bigger. Yeah. And they get more stressed and more anxiety comes about. And that's when all the other negative emotions follow through. Mm-hmm. And then the person is not accepting who they are. They are actually building a hole and they could easily fall into it. Mm-hmm. But I think when, you know, humor could be such a powerful tool. And I think also, you know, do you feel like it could be a cure-all, you know, it kind of like help you with anxiety, help you with frustration, help you with depression, you know, do you think it could save us from those clutches of negative, you know, conditions like depression and anxiety kind of falling on us if we handle it in a different way? Give us a low count. I want
to
hear.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm hesitant to have, you know, like I say, it sort of cures everything.
Yeah.
But I think it's a super important ingredient.
Right.
I mean, if we go back to, some of the things in history, Native American tradition, some of the spiritual practices in other places. There's a, I don't have it in front of me, but the coyote, for example, in Native American is a trickster. And part of the trickster tradition is to shake things up.
Right.
You know, to get out of the rigidity of like whatever you were doing.
Right.
Not like the evil version, but just shake things up a little bit.
Yeah.
And that often involves laughing.
Right.
So in Yoruba or like the region of Yoruba, which I think comprises a couple of African countries, there's a character called Papa Legba or Elegwa. And he's a trickster that is sort of the, you have to go through him if you want to contact the ancestors or contact the spirits or contact anything spiritual. But he's messes with people. Like he, you know, there's stories, you know, in that tradition where like he paints the left side or the one side black and he paints one side white and he walks, you know, between two villages. And one group says, I saw this white spirit. The other says, I saw this black spirit. And they get into a fight. And he's like, yeah. And so like, even that character of like, let's make this funny, is in my book, is in Not Fishy Enough. Like he's the character, there's an octopus that is kind of the gatekeeper of like taking himself too seriously. And actually being okay with himself. You know, he's part of the journey, part of the transformation. So I think it's a vital ingredient. but you also need care. You need support from people. You have to have, you know, practice like what's going on with my body. Can I do that? If you have trauma, yoga can be helpful. So you can like have your body on red alert and learn how to get through it anyway. There's a lot of tools out there, but I really hope we laugh at it ourselves just a little bit.
Right.
You know, like, cause being laughed at can be traumatic.
Yes.
You know, we don't want that.
No.
But saying nobody can laugh, well, I don't think that works either.
No.
You know, I've talked to a lot of clients who had a previous therapist, psychotherapist, for example, and they complained their therapist had no sense of humor. Like they wouldn't laugh. And they found it really frustrating.
Yeah. You know, how do you feel about like, you know, I sometimes feel like sometimes laughter and humor could actually bring a group of people together. It could be like the glue that actually kind of bonds everybody and actually brings a sense of closeness. Mm-hmm. And you could be different personalities, but that that sense of humor that you all have and you share, so you're able to like let go and not analyze things and just like be comfortable in your own set of shoes and joke around about things that may not be, you know, quote unquote, you know, perfect, you know, I don't believe in the word perfect, but you know what I mean. And, you know, but it could be the sense of glue that bonds everybody together and maybe brings those relationships to a stronger level where you actually could have good communication with each other. And also you could strengthen your inner strength of acceptance as well. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I feel strongly about that. I mean, I'm not saying, again, I'm hesitant to say it cures everything, but I believe it's a super important ingredient. I mean, for example, like you and I were talking like briefly before we started, I was asking about culture and your last name. And then you talked about being Greek. And I was wondering if I could ask you, when My Big Fat Greek Wedding came out, was that delightful to kind of have self-acceptance and laughing honored?
For sure. And the gentleman that played the father, that was my father to a T. Yes, always had like always cleaning. He was like the germ freak. He wanted to make everything had to be clean. Don't pick up anything dirty. Don't touch anything dirty, you know. And you know, I remember I was a little kid and I was like, you know, I saw this balloon on the side of the road. It was still blown up and I went to touch it. He almost had a heart attack, you know, because it's like, you know, you don't know who put your hands on that, you know. And if he had Windex with him, he probably would have Windexed my hands back then, you know.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So yeah, it sounds like we're really talking about, you know, a very similar experience of just there's something really healing about liking who you are, loving who you are. And even if there are things you don't like about yourself, you can, if you have a growth mindset, you can maybe start to change it. Because a lot of people believe I can't accept myself because.
Yes, you know, that's
and,
true.
You know, or they were taught not to.
Yes.
And there's something I would love to just gently challenge about that, you know. Is that still useful, even though you were taught that?
If you've never been to the Maryland Renaissance Festival, you don't know what you're missing. There's so much to see and do. It's like a 16th century theme park with shops and pubs, food and games, live jousting, crafts and music, 10 stages with nonstop entertainment. Fun for the whole family. Saturdays, Sundays, and Labor Day Monday through October 20th. Tickets online only at MarylandRenaissanceFestival.com. Save big on admission through September 8th. Near Annapolis, the Maryland Renaissance Festival. Time travel to fun.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. Everybody needs some variety in life. That's what I love about Chumba Casino. They know how to keep things fresh and exciting. All their games are free to play, like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire. You can claim free daily login bonuses too. And they release new games every week. So spice things up with ChumbaCasino.com now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.
You know, I find that like with some of my clients, I, you know, one of the main things I think was brought up to me was that when someone tells you something so many times when you're growing up, you tend to believe it. And right. I think sometimes these people, you know, they've been told negative things about themselves, you know, because 70% of the people in our society come from dysfunctional families. Wow. So if you come from 70% of the people come from dysfunctional families and someone is gearing negative energy into your ears, you know, on a consistent basis, and you live in a negative environment, yeah. you tend to either carry those behaviors or you tend to really absorb that negativity and you start to believe what they tell you because they're your parents. They know what they're talking about. Sure. And then you go into the world and you're believing that you are this character, this personality that, mm-hmm. you know, you could be so much more.
Right.
It's getting, I think, out of that and realizing, mm-hmm. you know, I think that draws into self-esteem too, is, mm-hmm. you know, realizing that you have the ability to reach your mm-hmm. potential. You know, how do you help someone when they're, you know, when they, to get to that point where they really learn to, you know, accept who they are, but
yeah.
they might have a false perception of who they are.
Yeah.
So how do you open your eyes to that person and let them see who they are,
yeah.
you know, and the real acceptance, who the person that you see, you know, because sometimes people are in that box and they can't see all the glorified things about them.
Yeah.
So how do you get them to really open their eyes and get out of that box for a minute and yeah. maybe see themselves as they're more than mm-hmm. what they really were? Sure.
Well, the box, I mean, that goes with the, you know, think out of the box, you know, as a mm-hmm. metaphor for like different ways of perceiving the world. There's one of my favorite ways of looking at or trying to understand how we see the world is with different maps. Like we can't possibly take in all the information that's happening around us at all times. So we have to leave stuff out. You know, that's a given, right? And so you can like, there's people, I think it's plant blindness. Someone was writing about recently, like some people just like can't even think about all the plants around them. It's just plants. And then like, oh, look at this flower. Like, yeah, it's been there for 2 years. It's perennial, you know? but so they have a world view, like this is, you know, this is their map. But what I ask people to do is look in, most of us seem to have smartphones these days, go into your whatever map application you use, and yeah. there's an option where you can look at the same where you are from a satellite view.
Mm-hmm.
There are bus stops, you know, there's a public transit one, there's a traffic one, but they're all looking at the same thing,
yeah,
but they're completely different.
Right.
And so I'd run into people in relationships together that are operating at completely different maps. You're lying. That's not even true. Well, because they're looking at different things.
Yes. You know,
they're in the same place and they're having different perceptions of the world. So this is kind of the first thing. You got to have the idea that there's different maps. And then, okay, so if we're already making meaning out of story, you know, out of our world, then it breaks you out of that there's more than, you know, that there's only one, you know, like for some people's religious practice, there is one way, there is, mm-hmm. that is the way, and anything that challenges it or questions it is wrong, if not apostate or dangerous.
Right.
So the idea that we can actually choose and make meaning is itself another paradigm.
Right.
Not everybody believes that it's possible to change that perception. And so then you go another step. Okay, I got a different map. It's possible to take information away. And then it's like, well, that means I can actually change the meaning of my life, the meaning of people making fun of me, the meaning right. of having these difficulties. And if I can change the meaning, what if I can make a different story out of it?
You know,
instead of the story is I am such a failure, here I go failing again. It's like I have failed a lot of times and I've learned a lot of things and I know how not to do it.
Right. You
know, that's a better way. That's, I think, a more effective way.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and another way, like if people have a lot of trouble with, okay, if I'm making up another story, that just means I'm lying to myself.
You know, right.
That just means I'm being delusional. I don't want to be delusional. That's right. crap. So then I counter with, it's like looking at the night sky. Okay, if you live in the city, you're not going to see much. But if you go out in the country, there's more lights in the sky. And if you're in the northern hemisphere, the same group of stars will be a little sauce water dipper. I wouldn't use this water dipper that I know of, but that's fine. Yeah. Water, the dipper or a bear. And if you go back far enough in times of Babylon, it was a wagon.
Right.
And apparently in Chinese tradition is a purple house. I still don't know exactly what that means, but there's a purple house. And so basically what that means is we're looking at the same data points. I even talked to a data scientist who loved this. She's like, wait, yeah. I'm just looking at the data and the meaning is all me. I made it up or someone else made it up and said, this is what it is.
Right. Right.
And instead of being handed, oh, this is what my life is. My parents said, I'm this. My parents said, I can't plan. My parents say, I will never be a dancer. My parents say, I can't sing. And going, maybe I can learn.
Right.
Maybe it's possible.
Yes.
That I can learn how to plan better. That I can learn how to be responsible when I haven't been responsible. You know, maybe I can quit smoking pot.
Right.
You know, my parents did. Handed it to me and they said, this is what you're supposed to, not literally my parents, but I mean, like, this is, you know, this is what I, you know, a child has been told, this is the way the world is.
Right.
You know, if they can go through these steps, like there's different maps people have, there's different meanings I can make, there's different stories I can tell, then they kind of get to, oh, I have a whole lot more influence over my own life than I even know.
Right. Right. I think that draws from positivity, self-esteem, and being courageous and learning those qualities. Like taking every negative thing that happens, pull something positive out of it. If we could pull something positive from a negative event, I think that just, you know, it kind of, we learn from it. It strengthens us. You know, everything that happens in our lives that's negative, we learn from it and it strengthens us because we overcome it. And if you notice, in life, no matter what we go through, and eventually at the end, we always pull through. It may be a long battle, it may be a short battle, it may be a hard battle, but we always somehow get through it.
Well, so that's your story.
Oh, I have lots of stories. We'll be here for a couple hours. Do you really want to talk
about now? Right. So, I mean, like, that's your story. That's how you make meaning of it. You know, I'm not sure if that it's not everybody's story, because otherwise we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right, exactly. You
know, so your story, it has always worked out well so far. Some people have terrible things happen to them and they don't know why it keeps happening.
Right.
You know, so I think it's important to me to balance this, like to have critical thinking, like, okay, that's not working. That didn't work. What can I learn from it? But also not judgment. Judgment doesn't help.
No, it does not.
You know, critical thinking, okay, I have diabetes and I eat a gallon of ice cream every day, you know, you could be like, oh, this will all work out for the best. Maybe. Right. Or it could be critical thinking. Okay. That is a lot of sugar. That, based on the data available, is probably going to cause a problem.
Right.
I'm not going to shift into self-judgment by saying, like, I'm a complete worthless human being, look at me, eat more ice cream. Right. But rather, okay, this isn't probably going to work.
Yeah.
I'm going to accept myself. This is what got me here. I'm not dead yet.
Right.
And maybe I can create a meaning for myself where it's possible to change. You know, I can change this habit.
Yes. Yes.
Without eviscerating myself because, you know, what have I done? I have diabetes now. I'm
No, that's an excellent answer. It's like, you know, critical thinking can be very, very good because sometimes if we're too judgmental too quickly, you know, we're going to give ourselves the wrong answers, you know, or, you know, a person that thinks they know us and does the same method is going to give us the wrong answers. So it's really, really looking at it critically and then and resurfacing, you know, a new way of dealing with the situation, coming to a positive, constructive solution, you know. And I also find, you know, when we go back to humor, like 70% of stress causes illness. So can, you know, can laughter really heal our wounds emotionally and physically? Ooh. You know, can, yeah. you know, can it really help us get through, you know, a lot of stuff and make us better physically, mentally, and, you know, or are we just fooling ourselves?
Yeah.
Or how powerful is humor?
It seems like it. I mean, I'm because I'm a therapist by trade and profession, there's, you know, I have kind of put limits on claims that I can make. I don't have the data on this. I feel like it's true. I think it's true. I don't know, you know, and I'm just going to owe up to that. But but in terms of how I constructed this book, yes. In terms of like, does it help kids especially to laugh and create a better foundation for themselves, you know, for the rest of their lives? Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, is to try to prevent hours of therapy for adults, is to see if I can get kids at a certain age, because around like 8 to 12, there's a spot in there where comparison is happening, like comparing themselves to other, comparing their art, comparing their music to others starts happening, but they don't really have critical thinking online yet.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so comparison seems to lead to either judgment or critical thinking.
Yeah. You know,
critical thinking is kind of neutral. Judgment is you're an idiot or you're worthless or I'm a fool.
Yeah.
But so in that age range, I wrote it to be, well, for me, I wrote it, a lot of it was for my kids. They were like that age group when I was first starting to work on it. But it was specifically for the people that are starting to think in terms of, oh, I love this, to transition from like, I make art, I love making art. And somewhere in there, they start to compare, oh, my art's not as good as Brian's, or like Sharon's are funnier, or like Luke's spaceships look more detailed.
Right.
A lot of kids will just stop, myself included. I stopped because I thought, well, I'm just not as good as that. Therefore, my life is over as an artist, I'll stop.
Right.
And what I'm trying to kind of poke a hole in is that erroneous belief system, you know, where you start to compare yourselves and get in a trap.
Yeah.
And I want to help people start to have critical thinking and compare, but have it be like, oh, then I will change.
Right.
I love drawing animals, so I will learn how to draw fur better. I will learn how to do curves better. I will play with it. You know, I will have fun with it. And that will get me to the expertise I want. That's my dream with this book.
We were talking about, it's kind of like a blend you mentioned earlier. It's not just one way of thinking. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a blend of different exercises and different things. Can you share with the audience like different kinds of exercises or tips that people can do to actually get to that point?
Sure. Well, honestly, a lot of books tend to go into like giving specific, like do these things.
Yeah.
For me, I thought what was really important is for adults that are reading it for themselves to ask themselves a question and talk to their friends about it. For parents to talk to their kids, educators to talk to their kids about the story. And ask questions. So like the last third of the book is less here's what you do and more like, well, how is that working?
Right.
Like, what is something that feels dumb or stupid that might be cool if you gave it a chance?
Yeah.
You know, that's a discussion question that I think would be great in a classroom. You know, another podcaster I was talked with last month said this should be mandatory reading in schools. Like, he really hopes it becomes like, you know, an influential thing, because of the way it's done. Like, I offer some anecdotes and your stuff for me, but I shift it to you. You know, like that's kind of the therapeutic role is, well, how can you? I can tell you stuff at the time, but how would you use this idea?
Like, right.
When is it the most unkind to make fun of people in social groups?
Right.
You know, and if kids are talking about this, they can kind of understand each other's perspective.
Yeah.
A little bit, or realize like that's a thing worth chewing on. Growing up in a small town, you know, there's questions on that. Like if you grew up in a very, like, this is restrictive, this is the way things are because the culture is small. How does that affect you? Does it mean you're better if you're a small town? Or does it mean that you're better because you're from a big city and everyone else is an idiot?
Right.
If they're from a small town by definition. Mm-hmm. So the main tip would be, mindfulness and some self-acceptance, but also asking.
Yeah.
Asking other people, what's it like to be you?
Right.
I mean, my understanding is a lot of people that are having trouble with the places they're in is, you know, if they are in a very liberal city and they have relatives that are, say, from a little further out and they're conservative or otherwise, it's hard to ask the questions. And if you don't have the exposure to someone that is Jewish will be something other and exotic if you don't ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't know someone who's from Ethiopia.
If you've never been to the Maryland Renaissance Festival, you don't know what you're missing. There's so much to see and do. It's like a 16th century theme park with shops and pubs, food and games, live jousting, crafts and music, 10 stages with nonstop entertainment. Fun for the whole family. Saturdays, Sundays, and Labor Day Monday through October 20th. Tickets online only at MarylandRenaissanceFestival.com. Save big on admission through September 8th. Near Annapolis, the Maryland Renaissance Festival. Time travel to fun.
I'm Victoria Cash, and I want to invite you to a place called Lucky Land, where you can play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. So what are you waiting for? The best way to discover your luck is to spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com. That's LuckyLandSlots.com. And get lucky today at Lucky Land. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And, you know, you will probably simplify, you know, oh, they're like this. All of them are like that. And it's really hard if you don't have the exposure to other ways of being.
Yes.
You know, everyone like me is the way things are. And that's what he grew up with. You know, like he's a crab, but he doesn't even know it because there's no crabs around.
Yes.
All there are fish. So he's like, well, I'm just really bad at this. And so like, it's the making contact, the asking questions, getting a little out of your comfort zone.
Right. And I think that's so important because I think, you know, I find that many people when they live in a certain environment for so long, it becomes a part of them and they don't, you know, they just create their own judgments and the way things are supposed to be. And they don't realize that everybody's different. And everybody has different needs, different thoughts, different feelings, has lived different lives. And they just look at things from their own set of eyes and their own perspective. And they don't realize that everybody is different. And, you know, I think that's very good that you teach people. And because I think we learned it at an early age. I think a lot of us would have been better off when we grow up because it's harder to change as we grow. But if we can nip it in the bud and learn how to understand people better, you know, easily communicate better with others and, you know, really learn to, you know, accept others and especially accept ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, life can be fun and, you know, it's great to find the fun, you know, if you like, Mary Poppins, you know, that's a great thing about find the fun and the job's half done.
Yeah.
I teach that to my kids. But it is also hard sometimes. You know, it can be really, really hard. And sometimes, in some situations, it is really, really, really hard. How can you find the fun when you're surviving a natural disaster or some kind of attack?
Exactly.
How can you cope with that? Oh, I've seen a lot of people in a lot of different situations learn to find a way to laugh. I mean, that was my conversation with John Cleese. He was so moved. I forget where he was, but he was doing some kind of comedy show or something that was comedy related. And it was in an area that was relatively war-torn recently. And he was just so moved that people living in such a difficult situation could
laugh.
Yeah.
You know, and can find it extremely moving. And I'm totally with that because it can be healing. There's some finesse to get it to be healing.
Oh, I think it does. Yeah. I think humor is very healing. You know, I think if we could just step out of, you know, our seriousness zone, and I think that's what our society is kind of falling back on. I feel like people have become so serious. Every little thing someone says, they take it to context and they take it so seriously, or they overanalyze a statement, you know, and it becomes more of an issue that doesn't even have to be an issue. You know, I think when we were growing up, we, you know, lots of things were said in the media in front of people, and people didn't take it so seriously. It was just a joke, you know, and people knew how to joke and people laughed it off, or they would come back with a sarcastic response in a jokingly way. Mm-hmm. And both people laughed and the stress was relieved.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And they actually, you know, mm-hmm. there was no anger. It actually made people on both sides, maybe even, you know, like each other more. And you know, I think this is something that your book is something very important that we need, because I think we're lacking it in this generation. And I think we really need to, you know, learn how to use and to take, you know, look at this in a more, you know, critical and non-judgmental sense, you know.
Sure.
And is there any other tips that you'd like to offer the listeners? You know, we've gone over a lot of important stuff. Humor is a big factor of healing, you know, that we've come across, and we've come across not being so judgmental and maybe looking at things critically, because everybody has a different life and everybody looks at things differently. Mm-hmm. But what are some important factors for people to learn about acceptance of themselves and accepting others for who they are and growing and not being so judgmental and being able to excel and be happier?
Well, I think it can really go down to one particular phrase, mammal maintenance. Mm-hmm. And so what mammal maintenance means is recognizing that the Homo sapiens that we think we are is often not exactly running the show.
Right.
When someone else gets stressed or feels unsafe, let alone when we get stressed or feel unsafe, we're not always at our best.
No.
You know, we can say things we regret. Other people can be really agitated and irritated about things.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, I find it really useful, especially with couples, to help them visualize that there's their partner sitting there, and there's also some kind of variably trained wild dog or horse or something that occasionally comes out. Right. And what I mean from that is, if we use humor without care, it can be a really unsafe work environment.
Yeah.
You know, take a joke that was extremely sexist and I feel unsafe.
Yeah.
Oh, that was just funny. Why are you being so sensitive? Well, because you insulted like my entire race.
Right.
Like you just minimized me to like a stereotype. Yes, it was funny and 80% of the people laughed and thought it was great and thought I should just chill. But that stings.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what all this, the taking things seriously is supposed to be, is because we kind of took, like, let's keep things safe for people, but we took a little too far.
Yeah.
You know, power is important. Being kind is important. But we've got to find a way through.
Yeah.
You know, and if we're conscious about power, we're conscious about how we impact people, we don't have to have all the rules in quite the same way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not alone in this. I listened to some comedy from Dave Chappelle recently, who was super in trouble with a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, especially in the trans community. Mm-hmm. But what I found out that really rattled me is that he had actually been a transgender ally in a very meaningful way to another comic for a while. You know, had a conversation, got to know them, asked questions, and had been supporting their work for some time.
But as soon as he said something that people thought, honestly, I don't remember what it was, that people thought, oh, this is a transphobe. It was like, okay, maybe he's making a joke. And there are people that are very sensitive and will have be negatively impacted.
Yeah.
But he's also trying to move the culture towards let's joke about stuff, you know?
You're right. Yeah.
Like he's the sort of person that found it okay to make fun of a mixed gender marriage and someone got really offended. And he's like, exactly, because I'm in a mixed culture marriage. I'm in a mixed race marriage and I'm a product of a mixed race marriage. That's why I'm making this joke, because he's laughing at himself.
Right.
And that's so challenging right now. You know, like it is a very difficult topic. Everywhere, and the sensitivity is important, you know, the seriousness is important. I just don't think that's all there is.
I how do we get to that point where people don't take things so seriously, where people are able to one joke about things like we once were, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you know, you see a lot of the sitcoms, we would never be able to put them back on TV again, you know, it would be chaos if we, you know, when we had, you know, we had a lot of funny sitcoms and, you know, and they would make jokes. They would make jokes about race. They would make jokes about this and that, but they went, you know, one would make joke, you know, say something about the other race and the other race would say something to them and people laughed. It was like, you know, it wasn't, two against one or, one person would say something and the other person of the other race would say something and it was funny and people laughed. And no one took it more than what it was. They didn't analyze it. They didn't make it bigger than what it was. Mm-hmm. You know, they both said something and it was truthful and they just laughed. And,
I think it would be great because I think the missing part of that, honestly, is like we didn't hear the voices of the people that were hurt. They were marginalized because there was no room for them.
Right. You know? So,
I mean, like, I think going back to the way things were, get tougher, everybody should take a joke. I think there's some wisdom to it. Mm-hmm. I just think a cooler way through is responsible comedy. You know, if you make the joke, you know, going back to the strong back, soft front, if you make the joke, go with it, commit to the joke, and then check, did I cross the line?
Right.
Was that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. Oh, okay. That was, I won't tell that again. I'll take that. You know, I'm listening, you know, if it's a dialogue, if you're responsible, if you're accountable for the impact that you have, I think we can loosen up a little bit.
Right. I think forgiveness has to come in too. So when people do make mistakes, don't crucify them, you know, they realize they made a mistake. They realize they might've crossed the line. Let's forgive them. And they learn, and we don't hold it against them. Cause I feel like a lot of people hold grudges and, you know, for a lot of people, it's hard for people to let go of those grudges, but that's a way of healing, I think. And even acceptance, building your acceptance also.
Well, there's a lot of people that feel unsafe. You know, I think that's where it comes from. You know, we can tell ourselves a story. We're unsafe at all times, or we can realize that if we've experienced a lot of trauma, we are tuned toward look for danger.
Yeah.
Like our nervous system actually physically changes temporarily to prioritize speed of response.
Yeah.
And make sure the right people are punished or canceled. Mm-hmm. You know, we're ready to act, you know, but that's a little more mammal. That's a little more like triggered, you know, like barking dog,
right.
Like, you know, enraged elephant kind of mammal.
Yeah.
It's if we can help people shift their nervous system from that ready for speed, then the other thing happens. You can shift the nervous system towards connection.
Right.
And that blew my mind that we can actually have our nervous system stuck in one gear, which is danger mode or connection mode.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's why that mammal maintenance is important, because if you can get someone see like, you're in stress. That joke impacted you. I want to hear all about it. You know, how did I hurt you?
Right.
Is there more? How did that impact you? I want to hear it. I'm not going to go into shame. I can take it. I can hear how I impacted you.
Right.
You know, and that mammal kind of mammal maintenance helps people go into safety. Mm-hmm. And then the connection is possible.
Right.
So like a great way is to like, I want people to feel safe so they can be strong. And then we can get along. Like in those three steps. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes very much sense. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I like that. I think this is great. I think what you're doing is great. And I think it's great that you have this book out because it's geared towards both adults and children. Mm-hmm. And communication is key, you know, and that's how we learn. And that's what you're provoking communication, you know, and it's you know, instigating growth, you know, mentally, you know, and I think it's excellent. Now, where can people find your book? Where can people go to get your book?
Sure. Well, it's on Amazon and lots of other booksellers. So Finney Books in Seattle was the first place to start carrying the book. So I'm really happy to support them. But notfishyenough.com will get you right to where can I find it? You know, a local bookstore near me, Barnes & Noble, whatever country you're in, there's, you know, this global distribution.
Now, do you have your own website with
information about,
can you tell us what your website is? So people can go also.
Sure. It's brittonkolber.com. So I've got to spell it because it's a challenging name. So Britton and like November, Kolber, brittonkolber.com. That's where you'll find my stuff and also links to the book.
And if people want to maybe acquire your services, do you have online services where like you could do therapy maybe mm-hmm. through or something like that?
Right. So it's currently in Washington State and working on the state of Illinois. But so if you're in those states, then we can talk. Otherwise, I can give you, you know, advice or like where to go next or how to refine therapy in your area. But as of now, it's the license is just for Washington and Illinois is the way it works.
Okay. And do you have any type of blog or any information that would be useful for people on your website? Or
I don't really have a blog. I do occasionally post stuff on Instagram. That's Psychology Metaphors is where I'm mm-hmm. at on Instagram.
Okay.
So those are the best places to find me.
Oh, great. This has been wonderful. You know, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been really useful because I think people really, this is something that is really needed in our society. You know, acceptance of who we are and acceptance of others is something that people really need to, you know, it really either enhance in their lives. There's always room to get better. Or they need to really work on it and maybe they're not there yet. But, you know, I think through, you know, everything that we've discussed, all the information you provided, I think is very beneficial and it's going to help a lot of people. So thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing this. And I can't wait to get your book because I want to read it myself. I'm very excited.
It's a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Oh, you're very welcome. You have a great day.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Ready to heat up your summer vacation? Get ready, things are about to get sizzling at Chumba Casino. Your summer getting a whole lot hotter with a special daily login bonus waiting just for you. So sign up now for reels of fun and reels of prizes right here at Chumba Casino with yours truly. Join me at ChumbaCasino.com and dive into a summer of social casino fun.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino, no purchase necessary. VGW Group, void where prohibited by law, 18 plus, terms and conditions apply.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.